Welcome to MGO Podcast 6.19. This is our basketball postmortem, even if the post is not actually mortem yet, or the mortem isn't actually post yet. We're doing this before the NIT selection show, which is not what we wanted to be saying on this Sunday, but we are saying it. That's what we're saying. And so this is our show about basketball, and we talk a little hockey, but let's not talk about the hockey, even though we talked about the hockey. So we're not entirely sure if Michigan is going to make the NIT.
There might be more basketball. There might not.
When you typed in bracket matrix as we prepped for this podcast, you did get the NIT bracket matrix. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've been checking that rather frequently this week.
I didn't know that existed.
It is a thing. It's unfortunately a
thing. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. With pretty good explanations as to why, but
yes.
Still. So we're still taping this before the NIT selection show, which apparently is a thing.
It is on ESPNU, so they've really prioritized that.
Well, you know, that's where it deserves to be.
Yes.
So we don't know if Michigan's in or out. We kind of think that they're out just because they're 500 on the year. So we're having a basketball postseason podcast now. And if something changes because they make the NIT and they do something, I guess you can do something spectacular in the NIT. They do something interesting in the NIT. That's possible.
Reasonably intriguing.
Yes. Then I think we'll revisit it. But right now we're just doing a postmortem.
Yes.
On the season, despite
not knowing whether it's actually over yet.
So just bear with us. People complain about not having podcasts. This is what you get: the uncertainty of whether or not Michigan season is over. Whatever. Anyway. You know, there were three phases to the season. There was the first phase where everything seemed hunky-dory and everything was going rather well.
Yeah.
And this extends through their preseason tournament where they beat Oregon pretty handily. And Oregon turns out to be a pretty decent team. They're projected to be an 8 seed. And then they go down to the wire with Villanova, which is going to be a 1 seed probably.
Yeah.
In a game that really felt like a Sweet 16 matchup between a 2 and a 3.
It did.
And at that point, you're like, all right, let's keep this going. Let's continue.
But unfortunately, unbeknownst to us, Derek Walton totally screws up his toe in that game.
Yes. And, of course, Spike also has a hip issue that plagues him most of the year.
Yes.
Walton just isn't right. Irvin hasn't developed. You know, and LeVert is not as efficient as Ostauskas or Treyberg.
And it's kind of a one-man band offense a little bit.
Right. And then you get kind of the panic section of the schedule where they lose to NJIT, they lose to Eastern Michigan, and then, you know, they go and they lose to SMU. They have a game against Arizona, which can barely be considered a game.
That was embarrassing.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the Arizona thing, we all kind of expected it just because they're so huge.
Well, yeah, and especially – that was right after the NJIT and EMU losses. So expectations were not high at the moment.
And at this point, this is like, what is going on? This is terrible. How are we supposed to cope with this? And then they lose LeVert and Walton in pretty quick succession.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's like, well, this is just a disaster of a season we don't have to care about anymore. And they actually show several signs of life.
Yeah.
Like if they hit a free throw or one extra bucket in a couple of these games that go to overtime, you're looking at a team that finishes, you know, 9-9, 8-10. I mean, not 8-10, they finish 8-10, 10-8.
Yeah.
In a Big Ten that's not a great version of the Big Ten, but still to be able to do it without your two best players is pretty impressive.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think what everybody kind of latched onto there over the last third of the season was you start to see these improvements, not just from the freshmen, but also from like Zach Irvin, especially in the last 4 or 5 games, turned into a totally different player. And there were a lot of signs for next year that were pretty promising just based on how this team kind of came together towards the end of the season.
Yeah. And, you know, it's never good to not make the tournament. But in terms of next year's team, you now have Zach Irvin, who's been forced to accept the mantle of the man.
Yeah.
And maybe if Walton's out there, maybe if LeVert is out there, that is a process that goes much slower because he can stick in that corner and still be reasonably efficient and not have to, you know, get yelled at by Beilein and being like, this is, you have to do this.
Now. Yeah. And it took him a while to pick it up even after LeVert and Walton went down.
I mean, exactly. I mean, this is something that obviously wasn't coming naturally to him.
Yeah.
But over the course of the Big Ten season, he really developed into that threes and guy that we were talking about earlier in the year.
Yeah, they were actually, I mean, the high screen, both with Irvin and a couple other guys, really started to work its way back into the offense towards the end of the season. And a lot of that was because Irvin not only developed court vision, where all of a sudden he's, you know, guy whose career high of assists was three for most of his career, all of a sudden is dishing out six and getting guys throwing impressive alley-oops to Aubrey Dawkins, but he's also showing off this impressive mid-range pull-up game towards the end of the year that, you know, I know you're not the biggest fan of those shots, but as a weapon off the pick and roll, I mean, obviously you prefer him to get all the way to the basket, but he was doing some of that, and he was also showing that he can hit those.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's be clear. Like, I don't like those shots, but what I don't like about those shots is when they come, you know, a foot inside the line.
Yeah. And in lieu of another decent opportunity, right, especially early on in the shot
when
clock.
It's part of a pick and roll package that also includes Irving getting the basket himself and dumping it off to those bigs, like making that big come out and challenge that opens other things up.
Yeah, so it adds another weapon.
I think it's the inefficient part of a troika that's highly efficient.
Yes.
So, and if you can make a decent number of those shots, then you're still par for the course on that part. And then you get the bonus stuff at the rim.
Yes.
And I think that's what we saw the Michigan offense redevelop over the past couple months, is that they actually got good shots at the rim. The Dawkins alley-oop you're referring to, there have been a couple now.
Yeah.
And, you know, those remind me of Glenn Robinson. And one of the things about Glenn Robinson is that he finished at like 80% at the rim.
He knew when to dive in from the corner and get wide open buckets.
And seeing that come back to the offense, I think, is one of the most promising things that we can see as Michigan fans, because that's the kind of stuff that opens up the three-pointers.
Yeah.
And also it gets you 2 points. let's not sell those 2 points short, because they're very, very hard to screw up those 2 points when you've got a guy like Aubrey Dawkins plunging in for the wing. Speaking of Aubrey Dawkins, I think it's time for another one of our "How the hell did no one recruit Aubrey Dawkins?"
Because
segments.
Seriously, what the hell?
That's incredible. He shot like 50% from three.
He's number one in e field goal percentage and true shooting percentage in the entire conference in conference play.
Not bad.
Which is decent.
And that's in conference play. So
the level of competition raised and his shooting got better. He shot 48% from three.
That's not sustainable. I mean, nobody shoots that long term. But to have that kind of weapon in a guy who can jump out of the gym, and he's Johnny Dawkins' freaking son.
Yep.
Like, they put him in front of the microphone for the post game after the Illinois game, and he's exactly as polished as you would think. Like, I mean, that guy, just put him in a suit now. He's going to be a head coach someday somewhere. And this is a guy who has everything academically, has everything in terms of heritage, can jump out of the gym, can shoot really well, and it's like Dayton was about to get this guy.
Yep.
I just don't understand.
And that's why occasionally Dayton beats Ohio State in the NCAA tournament.
That is true. I just, I mean, it's one thing if this guy is just this obscure dude whose dad is a lumberjack and plays, I don't know, do they have three-man basketball? Like, they have eight-man football or something?
I'm not sure if they've got just an actual three-on-three.
Like, he's only played Gus Macker, like, because he's in such a small town.
Yeah. Only.
Like, that I would understand, but, like, anyway. We've had our segment about why didn't anyone recruit Aubrey Dawkins. I look forward to many more.
Yeah, this is going to be, like, hopefully a four-year running thing.
Well, maybe three or two. Yeah, probably not two. I think he's got to develop a little bit more before he can think about it. But he's obviously got those upsides.
He has NBA athleticism. I don't think there's much question about that.
There's no question about that. Anyway, so after the guys go down and you lose all expectations, Michigan is shockingly competitive. And they have a couple of duds in there. They got blown out by Ohio State once. They got blown out by Michigan State once. It's fine.
Those are good teams.
I mean, and that was going to happen. I mean, you're just going to have a bad game and you don't have the defensive chops with, you know, a 6'7" center and Spike Albrecht out there to, like, keep up when your offense isn't clicking.
Yeah, and, you know, not just a 6'7" center and Spike Albrecht, but those were the two most experienced guys on the floor. Yeah. And when you're talking about defense, that could be a problem.
Well, I mean, this last time I checked KenPom, they were 335th in experience out of, like, 350 teams.
They're up to 334th.
And this has been like an absolute constant for the last 4 or 5 years of Michigan basketball.
Yeah.
Where they're just always in the 300s and you like that. You start looking for major conference teams near them and it's always Kentucky. Like, I was like, oh, well, that's, I wish we recruited like Kentucky, but then that we wouldn't be able to do that because we're not Kentucky. And, you know, next year, I keep saying this, next year they will be reasonably experienced. I mean, even if they lose LeVert, you're looking at getting a full six-man freshman class back,
yeah,
and aged. You're going to get Walton back. He's going to get older. This is – I'm not telling anything. People – like next year they will be older.
You get Spike back. You get Irvin back. These are upperclassmen, which is allowed apparently.
It is allowed.
You can do this.
So finally I think we're going to have a class that plays good college basketball but is also not – the kind of guys who are going to leap immediately to the NBA, which was great, but it did kind of set up this year when you've got, you know, three guys from last year's class with eligibility remaining who leave for the NBA. And we knew Stoutz was going to go. I think we knew Robinson was going to go, even though that was obviously not a great idea.
Yeah.
Then losing McGarry was I have so many McGarry feels. Now that he's like playing in the NBA and everybody in the NBA is like, this guy, look at this guy. I'm like, I love McGarry so much.
I love him too.
I mean,
there is the little twinge of like, oh, see, man, what if.
That twinge for me is a much larger twinge.
Yeah.
Yeah, like because you put him on last year's team and, I mean, they were a hair away from making the Final Four even without him.
Yeah.
And you had a clear NBA first-round pick who's probably even better than that, minus the health issues. I got to stop doing this. Because I just like – I think about it and then I just stare ahead for 10 minutes at a time. And I can't do that on podcasts because
– people don't really get the visual there.
Right. And also it will be boring.
Yeah, that too.
I'm going to do it anyway. Anyway, now that our damn it, Mitch is back issue interlude has passed, this is a freshman class that I figure is going to be around pretty much in whole for 4 years. I mean, you could see Dawkins get to the point where he's an NBA prospect.
Which is wild that we're talking about that.
But, I mean, the rest of it, it seems like, oh, they're going to be around.
Yeah. I mean, Rockman is not – I mean, he's promising, but he doesn't fit the type of a early entry NBA guy. He's a 6'4 shooting guard. Chapman is not there.
Correct.
And
Doyle's very promising, but also not – I mean, he's a big. He's not
– that's a four-year project. Most big men are.
And then you also have Wilson coming off a redshirt, who I still think is really promising, especially as a shot blocker.
Yes.
And then
and like a hidden reason why people are freaking out about Bielfeldt leaving, and I don't think they should be concerned about that.
No, I don't think so either. And then sort of this class now, because he will be a sophomore next year, Duncan Robinson.
Yes.
Who is reputed to be a pure shooter.
And with – I mean, it seemed like, you know – when they brought him in, it almost seemed like they were going to have to put him in like a starting role or like a major, you know, six-man role off, you know, something where he was going to see really significant minutes and you were going to be kind of nervous about that because, yes, he can shoot, but the rest of him is a D3 basketball player as far as we know.
Well.
I mean, obviously got himself out of that, but there are going to be concerns about the rest of his game until we see him on the court.
Sure.
But now all of a sudden you have this depth that's been built with all of these freshmen who were not necessarily expected to contribute, where with Robinson, there's not as much pressure for him to come in and be an integral part of the rotation. I expect he will be a significant part of the rotation, but it's not something where he has to come in and play 25 minutes a game.
Yeah, and I mean, this depends a little bit on the one NBA decision we are waiting on, which is Caris LeVert.
Yes. Which we will apparently wait on all the way until April 26th.
I mean, I guess it's better than not. I mean, I'd rather know now, but in terms of, like, is he leaning one way or the other, I don't think that is the case yet. And the quotes he gave after the Illinois game were, I would say, encouraging. I mean, he obviously wants to be in the NBA, but yes, the kind of things he said seemed of a different tenor than the things that Robinson said or Stauskas said last year.
Well, and speaking of Robinson, one of the things that LeVert has said and that I think Robinson has also said is that those two are going to talk to each other about the early entry process before LeVert comes out. And given that Robinson was cut by the Timberwolves this year, and I mean, he did get picked up by the Sixers, but that is not a guarantee of long-term NBA tenure.
Well, I mean,
so it'll be interesting to see what
the Robinson thing was so messed up. Just in terms of, like, motivations, and I mean, it's not messed up, but so he has his freshman year, and after it, he's projected as, you know, a mid-first-round pick easily, not quite a lottery pick. He decides to come back, and then his game does not develop. And I wasn't surprised by that. I thought that he was just kind of this guy who had this one aspect. He reminded me of Darvin Ham.
Oof.
No, I mean, Darvin Ham was an NBA player for like a decade.
That's true.
But he was like a bench player because he couldn't grade his own shot. But he had crazy athleticism. He was about 6 foot six. He could leap out of the building. He'd shoot a little bit.
True. He did break a backboard in college.
He was a really good college player, but that's kind of what I thought when I looked at Glenn Robinson. And then even though I think it was widely known he was going to be a second round pick, he decided to go after his sophomore year because, you know, that was his plan. He had the plan where he was just going to come back. He was going to dominate with McGarry. None of that worked out, and he went anyway. And I wonder if he regrets it. I mean,
it's a good question.
Obviously, he has the right to do whatever he wants to do. But I wonder if he was like, I probably should have just come back to Michigan and tried to do what Zach Irvin is doing this year. So if that's the case and he's talking with LeVert, then LeVert might decide to come back.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've talked to Sam about this a little bit, and he says that, you know, LeVert does really enjoy school, and he is 1 year away from a degree. I think he would be the first kid in his family to graduate. I'm not sure on that, though. And, you know, he thought that he was probably leaning towards coming back. So I don't take that as gospel. Don't yell at Sam if this doesn't happen. But this is just a conversation that I had with him. And so if you get him back, then obviously – even without LeVert, this looks like a roster that is much, much better than last year's. But with LeVert, you're like, wow.
All of a sudden, you've got serious depth everywhere except maybe, you know, at center, possibly.
Crazy depth. Even at center, I mean.
Yeah, it's more about the quality at center as opposed to the depth.
Yeah, and you know, young big guys suck. Let's just
let's get that out there.
Young big guys suck.
Really got to hammer that point home.
Like, we talk about this in every podcast, like, do you remember Frank Kaminsky as a freshman?
You don't, because he didn't do anything.
Yeah, exactly. And so the amount of suck that young bigs who are not the top tier NBA top 20 guys who can just out-athletic everybody, they are so much worse than the point guards. So much worse.
I mean, and even when you've got a guy who's remarkably talented, you know, Jordan Morgan started over Mitch McGarry for a lot of Mitch McGarry's career.
That is true. Mitch McGarry had, like, what, 20 minutes a game even after the – like, his KenPom stats show him getting, like, 20 minutes a game even after he dominated the NCAA tournament. And, like, we all love Jordan Morgan, but
– you know, he's not an NBA first round.
Right. It takes time for these guys to develop. And, you know, I'm okay with the fact that we have a guy like Mark Dinal who didn't have a good freshman year.
No.
Didn't. And then you got a guy like Ricky Doyle, who I think did have a good freshman year, obviously needs to work on whatever the basketball equivalent of the Jugs machine is.
Yeah.
And needs to get a little bit more on the boards. But in terms of, like, skill when he gets the ball in the post, I don't think I've seen a Michigan big have that kind of skill since, good God, Chris Webber. I mean, like, seriously, who's the last big who could take the ball in the post and score against Frank Kaminsky?
I certainly don't remember Courtney Sims pulling any pivoting moves that got tied guys up in knots and ended in just easy layups. And,
yeah, I mean, his
and
shooting.
Doyle's got a couple. And he's, that little hook shot that he's got is going to be really dangerous.
His shooting percentage is like, you know, 60-some percent. And while Jordan Morgan was a lot better than that over the course of his career, he was also benefiting from a much more fluid offense.
He had a lot of he was on the receiving end of a lot of Trey Burke pick and roll dishes
right.
that Ricky Doyle was not the beneficiary
and,
of.
You know, let's not underrate the ability to finish those at a 70% pace, even when you're on a below the rim type player.
Yes.
I mean, we've seen guys miss bunnies and it's just like, so that is a definite skill, but yes. The kind of efficiency Doyle's had while generating a number of his shots for himself kind of sets him apart. And if he can just do the defense and, I don't know, emotional leader stuff that Jordan Morgan did over the course of his career, you know, he's going to be a real asset.
Yeah, it would be nice to see his shot blocking come along a little bit more. But
a little bit. I mean,
that's not how Beeline coaches his bigs.
It's, and I think that he's maybe just a little bit, he's like an inch too short. He's like an inch short and vertical to make that a really positive aspect of his game.
Yeah.
Like we've seen him try to block shots and he's real close, but he doesn't actually get to a lot of them. So I think I might also prefer when you're help defense, not offering that and just trying to get the rebound. Cause we've seen Doyle give up some offensive rebounds when he goes for the block shot on a shot that has been contested extremely well by the on-ball defender.
Yeah.
And that's always one of the issues. When
the Amir Williams.
Yes, yes. Oh, wow. That is, yes, yes, absolutely. yeah, because he tries to block everything. Anyway, so Doyle is a guy who, you know, I think if we had seen him for 10 minutes a game this year, we would be super excited about him.
Yeah.
And there's kind of this, you know, field of thought that, you know, he sucks and he's bad. Whenever I, like, say that Doyle should be on the court on Twitter, I get pushback because Doyle is a freshman big and he has issues. And the hands thing does bother me. Like, I don't know if that gets fixed.
Yeah, part of that might just be that's
right.
That's well, him. And
like we've seen bigs like that before. Like, remember JC Mathis?
I do. He was not very good.
No, he was not. But his outstanding like thing that he could not do was catch a basketball. And there is just kind of this awkwardness that some bigs have that prevent them from being that smooth of the ball. Like, that was kind of the magic about Mitch, is that Mitch was, I mean, he had the skills to like put the ball on the deck a couple times in a game and get to the hoop, or the Hakeem thing he did in the NBA where he gave him the dream shake. Like, that's something that not everybody can do. And that might be just a hand size thing.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of the area for improvement for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that and getting his, I mean, that is tied into the rebounding. I would like to see him be a little bit more aggressive going for rebounds defensively, but I know Beeline's strategy was a little bit just have him seal off and let the guards go after it.
It was kind of a weird rebounding year. I mean, we talked about this before the show. I would like to see what the team stats were when he was on the court versus Denal versus Bielefeld, because that seems like an area where just because you're not getting the rebounds doesn't necessarily mean that you're hurting the team, because, you know, Walton kind of made a trademark for himself this year by skying for rebounds that were very mansome for a point guard, despite not being able to do anything other than that with his foot problems.
And Irvin down the stretch kind of started filling that role a little bit, although he was also guarding bigger guys. So that was also just kind of on him a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, I mean, that's obviously something that he does have to improve somewhat. I just want to see if that had a negative impact versus a Bielefeld who's like 6'7" and obviously has some issues.
But is putting up remarkably good rebounding numbers.
Right, yeah. I mean, is that actually something that is translating to more offensive rebounds, I mean, more defensive rebounds for the team? I don't know. It certainly seems like it should, but just given the fact that I felt like offensive rebounds happen quite a lot with Bielefeld on the court, kind of, I don't know. My eye test doesn't necessarily agree with those stats, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I mean, with Bielefeld, you've got a lot more. First of all, a lot of that, when Bielefeld's on the court, there tends to be more offense driven near the basket because teams go after that guy.
Yeah.
And so, you're getting a lot more chances for defensive rebounds because you're getting a lot of close in shots that tend to fall close to the basket when they miss, but you also are getting a lot of close-in shots near the basket that also have a tendency to go in at a higher rate.
So, I mean, this is a season that I think we would classify it as a disappointment.
Yeah, when you look on the whole, I mean, even when accounting for the injuries, you look at the beginning of the year and there was an expectation that this team would click a little bit more than they did, a lot more than they did when it came to some of the.
Yeah, I mean, if they win those two games against the NJIT and EMU, then they're like 18-14. They're still going to the NIT, but I think this season feels totally different.
Yeah, those two losses really hung over this team the whole way.
Yeah, and I remember, you know, complaining that the Eastern Michigan game was after the Syracuse game because you would, like, if you had this opportunity to prep for Syracuse by playing Eastern Michigan beforehand, you should do it. And apparently I was wrong about that. I mean, they beat Syracuse too. I mean, Syracuse isn't great, but we have to remember that they won their game in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. And, you know, they had these three games early in the year that it's like, yeah, this is standard business. Like, well, this is not going to be a one seed team, but this is a team that might get a Sweet 16 seed. And then that second half of the non-conference schedule just derailed everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, Walton's injury was a season long thing and had some role in that, but even with that, you've got LeVert out there, you've got Irvin out there. You should be able to do better than that.
Yeah, and one injury, even to a key player, should not derail a team that's supposed to be as good as what Michigan was supposed to be heading into this year.
So a disappointment, but then you get the Big Ten schedule, and they've given you a lot of reason to believe they're going to bounce right back next year.
Yeah. It really stinks that they only play State once.
Well, that's going to happen two-thirds of the time from now on because they added Rutgers and Maryland. Maryland at least has a program, but Rutgers is a complete non-entity. Like, every game against Rutgers is a waste for every Big Ten team, even if you beat them. I mean, even if they beat you, like happened to Wisconsin.
Yeah, there was no upside for Wisconsin in that.
No, I mean, it's just like they go 2-16 in the league. Their defense is appalling. It's just like adding.
Their offense is actually more appalling.
I know. It's like adding Coppin State. We put Coppin State in our basketball league because we thought it would make us more money. It's just, it might make us more money, but as a Big Ten fan, I don't care.
Rutgers is two spots behind Texas A&M Corpus Christi on the KenPom ratings.
Well, who they're right behind?
George Mason. Sounds better than it is.
That sounds a lot better. Yeah.
And they're one spot ahead of East Carolina. I mean, it's not a – they're three spots behind Oral Roberts. You know,
that's the one you should have started
with.
This
is not tremendous company. Incarnate Word is a few spots above them.
Didn't Incarnate Word, like, beat Nebraska this year?
I believe they did. Yes, they did, at Nebraska.
Big Ten. That's a Big Ten. Big Ten! All right, let's take a little break, and then we'll seriously talk about, like, next year men's distribution.
We're sleeping through the days and sinking like a ship. We're wasting away, bit by bit. Everyone is gone and everything's changed. It won't ever be the same. And when it's over, we'll say this winter hasn't been so rough. All it was cold, but still it wasn't cold.
All right, this is the undisputed deepest B-line roster I can remember at Michigan. So I've got 12 guys written down here. One of them has a question mark near his name, but I assume that he will be here and available at this point, and that is Moritz Wagner.
It certainly looks like that's heading in that direction where he's going to be at Michigan.
Apparently he wants to play college ball. He's visited Michigan. He hasn't visited anywhere else. He's got his offer.
Flew out to Germany a little while ago. I mean, you know.
Like, any team that wants to catch up with Michigan at this point is going to have to do some heavy lifting. And Rivals Eric Bossy told Chris Ballas that if he was a U.S. prep, he would be a top 20 to 40 player, which I think is hard to determine.
Yeah, I mean, judging guys who play in overseas leagues is always really difficult.
But I mean, he's a 6'8" guy who can really handle the ball. I think he's more of a Chapman than an Irvin at this point because – they say that his shooting is okay, but needs work. So he's more of a guy who will get to the basket and that kind of stuff. But 6'8", maybe 6'9", can play that four spot. And if he's available, you know, I think he comes in and maybe red shirts. He's very, very skinny.
He is.
So I kind of doubt the like top 20 to 40 thing. But if that's true, that would be a nice addition. Even without him, you've got, you know, I see 11 guys on this roster who could play.
Yeah, and you don't see many 11-man rotations.
You do
really
not.
Any.
So somebody is going to lose out here. But, you know, everybody except Austin Hatch, who is scheduled to have a scholarship next year, is a guy who you're like, well, that guy should get 10 minutes a game, if not more. So starting with point guard, obviously Derek Walton and Spike Albrecht return.
That's a pretty solid one, too.
That's a pretty solid run, too, especially after Spike established himself to be a guy who can play offense against anybody in the league as a lead point guard.
Yeah, and one huge thing he developed this year was he'll actually take the ball to the basket and put it up every once in a while, which even if he's not like a crazy effective like drive to the rim off the pick and roll layup guy, it just opens up so much when he's
– you have to respect
teams take him seriously now when he's going to the basket, getting in the air, and then dishing it off to guys.
Like he did a donut in the lane against Illinois and then pulled up for like an elbow fall-away jumper. And
it was
I'm like –
beautiful.
And I think the color guy just laughed when it went in. He's just like, and that's the kind of player he is, where he's a delight because he's so small and he's so good. It's just, it's a spectacular thing. And then you have Derek Walton coming back, who hasn't been as efficient as Spike offensively so far, but obviously a much better defensive player, has more upside. I mean, he's a legit 6 foot instead of 5'10" or whatever Spike is. And
it's almost impossible to take anything out of this year from him because he got hurt so early on and tried to play through it. I mean, his stats in the Big Ten shooting wise are appalling because he couldn't jump off.
As a freshman, he was mostly a spot up shooter and he hit 40% from three that year. Obviously, a guy who when healthy and given on the opportunity can knock down shots. And now it's about developing the ability to create more shots, and he should be able to do that. He did that in high school excellently.
And there were flashes of it his freshman year where he would come off the pick and roll a little bit, and in transition he was such a good finisher there that you'd think that would translate into the half court once that becomes his job.
Yeah, I hope Dak doesn't get on us for saying this, but I think he is pretty much the biggest X factor for next year's team.
Yes.
Because you could get a performance like his freshman year performance, and that would be like, oh, that's all right. But in terms of point guards that LaVall Jordan has coached, you know, in terms of Walton's upside and, you know, what he could be if he develops to the point that, you know, Morris did or a Burke did, you know, he could be an All-Big Ten player.
And Jordan's got a pretty good track record of year two breakout, and we might get the delayed year two breakout with Walton here.
We never got to see that this year just because he was hurt from the drop. And he really tried to tough it out, but you could just tell that explosion that – is required if you're going to be a 6 foot guy who gets to the bucket. You need to be Yogi Ferrell, basically.
Yes.
Just wasn't there. And so his offense really suffered, and hopefully we can get him healthy and get him back to where he was looking like he was going before this year.
Yeah. And there were even like little things that you can pull from his numbers that are obviously very limited, but the rebounding stuff is obviously super promising, especially considering that he was doing that on 1 foot, basically. Yeah, I don't know how he did it, but he's going to be a point guard who might be able to like
the best super injured defensive rebounding guard in the country.
So you can stuff the stash. He hit 29 of his 31 free throws in Big Ten play. Like the guy's shooting is when you're looking for like future shooting projections, a lot of times what you want to take a hard look at is free throws, because that's kind of the best barometer of just a guy's true shooting ability.
Mm-hmm.
And he's lights out from the line. He was still shooting a decent percentage from 3-point, even though he didn't have much lift. The thing that suffered was just he couldn't really get to the basket and get above any center.
Yep. And if that gets fixed and, you know, they take that year of coaching, I think that he has massive upside, especially compared to like what he was able to do this year. So obviously Spike and Walton are going to split, I would say, 95% of the point guard minutes. And then the other thing that you have to consider is how often, how long are these guys on the floor together? Because you've got a lot of options other places. They're much taller. It's probably going to be a better defensive lineup. But the Walton / Spike lineup is something that we've seen for big chunks of this year for, you know, 5, 10, maybe 15 minutes a game. And I kind of feel like you're going to see it for 5 or 10 minutes.
And it does take advantage of Walton's spot up shooting ability and spikes. I mean, it lets them both play a little bit off the ball. I think that one's just going to come down to a game by game matchup. I mean, Beilein is. I think next year it's going to be really interesting to see how he manages the rotation because he's almost going to be able to have different lineups for different teams.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you can see it, like, you know, a team that doesn't have a point guard that's really much of a threat to do much. Like if Michigan State is starting Lou Rawls, Tum Tum Nairn Jr. next year, you could see Spike out there for a long time just playing like basically hockey goalie in the lane against him.
Yes.
Unless he develops a jump shot, which seems like there are guys who you can see developing a jump shot and there's guys who you just can't, and I'd be surprised.
Yeah, he was getting the Darius Morris, like, I'm just going to park myself in the paint and cut off passing lanes treatment.
I don't think I've ever seen people play as far off a point guard as they play off him. But in any case, like, you know, you get a lineup like that where one of the two guards isn't much of a threat, I think you could see a lot of this two-guard lineup as long as you've got a matchup that you can kind of hide Spike in.
Yeah, and if LeVert doesn't come back, then that lineup is going to be pretty prominent no matter what.
Well, speaking of that, our shooting guard is in flux because if LeVert comes back, obviously he's getting 30 to 35 minutes there. Should be all Big Ten type player. I mean, even before his injury, we saw him do the things late in games where he would take over.
And he led Michigan in literally every major statistical category.
I do think that he really needs to improve defensively. Like,
yeah, it's been the weird disconnect in terms of analysis of his game is that NBA scouts are still saying he's like a really promising defender, and it's, you know, there's potential.
I mean,
but it has not been realized yet.
But last year he was struggling, and to get that kind of struggle out of a guy who's not quite Nick Stauskas efficiency wise, I think was hurting. And obviously I want the guy back, but I hope that for his senior year, someone gets in his jaw and is telling him that, you know, he needs to improve this aspect of his game. Otherwise he's going to get eaten up at the next level. So if LeVert comes back, it's a pretty simple thing where LeVert plays and then, you know, you get a couple of guys splitting 10 minutes behind him. If he doesn't, I think that changes a lot. Because right now I've got 1 through 4 is like Walton / Spike, LeVert, Dawkins, and then Irvin at your 4.
Yeah.
So if LeVert is gone, who's your shooting guard and who comes in the lineup? I think your top two options are probably Marr and Duncan Robinson, but who goes where is up for debate, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, talking about it positionally is a little strange just because
2 through 4 doesn't really matter.
Well, 2 through 4 doesn't necessarily matter. And also, a lot of times with Beilein's lineups, especially this year when things got super weird, you'd have guys playing one spot on offense and an entirely different spot on defense. So I almost prefer to look at it as what would these guys defend in terms of the positions, because that tends to have more impact.
That's true. Like the Irvin on Kaminsky gambit was interesting.
It was. That was
not entirely ineffective, but kind of like just... It's like that's
Bielfeldt on Nigel Hayes, I think, was the bigger problem in that lineup.
Yeah.
That did not last long.
But, you know, past LeVert, if they do get LeVert back, the guy who I think might get frozen out in terms of playing time is Marr. He had a very promising freshman year. He obviously has the bravado to go directly into anybody's chest. Doesn't matter if you're 7 feet or not. Kind of struggled from three, but is a guy who could improve there, make shots. I think he's more of a point guard than a shooting guard right now, just in terms of like his ability to get where he wants to go. He has to develop the ability, the court vision.
Yeah, to actually start hitting some shooters.
But I kind of feel like he might lose a bunch of playing time if LeVert comes back, and then he would be a major feature as an upperclassman.
Yeah. And one thing that I think might end up getting him on the floor a fair amount, especially toward the end of games, is that he ended up drawing Michigan's biggest defensive assignments on the perimeter a lot down the stretch.
That is a good point.
And I think that took away from his offense a little bit down the stretch, but added a lot of value in terms of what he was. I mean, he was all over the place against D'Angelo Russell when Michigan beat Ohio State.
I think you mean all over the place in the good way, not the bad way.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, because Russell is, you know, they work him through a ton to get him the ball. So it's a high-energy defensive assignment, and he was up to the task. And down the stretch, I mean, you know, when Michigan just blew out Illinois, you know, he was doing a solid job. You know, they've got three pretty solid perimeter players who score a decent amount for them, and none of those guys had good games. I thought he, down the stretch, showed a lot defensively that might get him on the court.
That is a good point, especially if LeVert is not doing the same kind of things. I mean, you could see him take some of those minutes against the starter, and then you have LeVert going against whoever that guy's backup is for those 10 minutes a game, along with the rest. Like, you could get Mar 10 minutes a game as, like, the annoy the best offensive player on the other team, or maybe even 15.
Yeah.
If he really steps that, he's going to step it up. If he continues that aspect of the game, if it's not some sort of mirage based on a short period of time.
Because we are basing this off of a lot of.
I mean, if he is like a legit plus defender on the perimeter, that would be an excellent thing to be able to have going, not just for 15 minutes a game, but going for like full blast 15 minutes a game where he doesn't care about stamina or anything. He's just going to get in your jock and get you off your game.
Yeah.
That is an excellent point. So, the minutes dilemma.
There you go. It's going to be really tough to shake out.
Anyway, small forward, I have Dawkins and Robinson here. Obviously, Dawkins shot 48% from three in Big Ten play, which is out of this world. Adds some rebounding, adds some dunks.
Although the rebounding numbers never lived up to like the memories of the crazy high sky rebounds.
he had like one or two like offensive rebounds a game where it's just like, damn, son. But the down-to-down rebounding, I guess that's not a thing in basketball. But whatever, the down-to-down rebounding was not there, and I think that's one of the things that Dawkins really needs to up. He needs to put some weight on. He needs to be more physical. He needs to, like, get into the range where, you know, he's going to be a 6'6" guy who can bang in the post a little bit. Maybe not on offense, because that's not the way Michigan plays much offense. But on defense, you know, being able to stand up to – maybe not Brandon Dawson, but someone a little bit less like a dinosaur than Brandon Dawson.
Yes.
I don't know, a Terrence Petaway. Like, that would be one of those guys who I think right now would have a big advantage against Dawkins.
Yeah, Dawkins
back him down, but maybe not next year.
Yeah, he's got some progress that needs to be made defensively. I thought of the freshman, he was probably the weakest on that end. And he's going to play because when you can shoot like that in this offense, you're going to be on the court. But it seems like there's some ground to be covered there.
Yeah, and you know, you want to see him develop those like straight line after a closeout drives that we saw Glenn Robinson maybe have a little bit of. You know, Irvin developed that a little bit before he became more than that late in the year.
Yeah,
just a guy that obviously has scads of upside, but it's about reaching that. And he's going to be in Ann Arbor all summer. I think the entire freshman class is sticking around.
Yes.
So hopefully he'll get that kind of psychic connection that gets him a lot of the dunks that GR3 had. That was one of the underrated things that GR3 did. He was really good about cutting off the ball. So I remember after the Indiana game earlier in the year, I made mention of a play that Blackman and Yogi Ferrell had together where Blackman took a couple of dribbles, drew guys to him, and then Yogi made a great cut into the center of the defense that basically obliterated it. And we didn't see that very much from Michigan this year. Like the off-ball movement, the giving people passing options. I think that's one of the secret things that improved with Irvin's game is that all of a sudden he knew that Dawkins was going to be there. He knew where the big was going to be. And as they got more precise with the complex aspects of Beeline's offense, that there were more opportunities for assists to take.
Yeah, and that was kind of like, you know, you've got two factors working against Michigan there for that to develop this year. You've got freshman learning Beeline system, and you've also got a constantly changing lineup where these guys aren't necessarily used to playing with each other. So that should be something that takes a pretty big step forward next year, especially with all these guys sticking around this summer. And I think all the freshmen have pretty much confirmed that they're staying. Irvin was still up in the air, but it'd be awesome if he stayed too and developed a rapport with those guys.
And then Duncan Robinson, a wild card, a D3 transfer, 6'7", 6'8", probably the best guy in D3 last year as a freshman. Another guy who didn't get recruited very heavily, but I mean, we've seen people transfer up after establishing themselves real players and they've done well. I think he'd still be at Williams if his coach was still there. And his coach is kind of like one of those Beeline guys, so he kind of hooked him up and they looked at him, they loved him. And the practice hype about him is that, you know, he might not be Nick Stauskas, but if you put him in the corner and you give him an open look, that part of him is.
He put on a friggin' show at Media Day. I mean, it was a sight to behold where there was nobody else on the team capable of doing that, and there hasn't been besides Stauskas that I've seen.
Well, maybe Aubrey.
But he wasn't doing that, you know. Yeah. I mean, Aubrey was out there too, and in terms of the shoot-around stuff, with Robinson, it was one of those things where you were shocked if he missed in a practice setting. Now, obviously, in a game setting,
sure,
things might change, but I think, you use the X factor term earlier, and I think Robinson might be
he's another one.
A huge one for next, because if you got a guy who can stand in a corner and knock down 45% of his threes or something, I mean, bring that guy off the bench a little bit. Before Indiana kind of collapsed, they had some pretty huge contributions from guys who could just kind of wander onto the court and hit a ton of threes. And
yeah, there was the one guy, I forget what his name was.
Colin Hartman.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking in terms of like a possible Duncan Robinson role for next year, where you just kind of have this guy that teams hate to see come off the bench, because all of a sudden you've got to stretch your defense and make sure you never lose track of this guy. And he's not one of the three or four main options.
Right.
That can really put a defense in a bind. So we'll see. There's obviously a lot unknown about him.
I mean, the rest of his game is a question. Can he develop a game where he gets to the basket? I mean, he's 6'7". He's a guy who, once he gets there, he might have an advantage because he's going to be taller than the usual guy who gets there. Can he play defense?
Yeah, and I think even more than the other offensive stuff, his ability to at least tread water defensively is probably the biggest thing.
Can he rebound? Can he play the four? I mean, he's got the requisite size, and that would be a nice thing if he can rebound. Who knows? That's going to be a major X factor. I mean, he's a guy he could be a 10 minutes a game guy who comes off the bench and hits some threes, or he could be a big time player.
Or he could redshirt. He doesn't need a redshirt year, but he could be a guy who effectively redshirts because he gets knocked out of the rotation, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he won't redshirt because he redshirted this year, but he could not play very much. At power forward, I have Irvin because power forward on the B-line is just another small forward, really. Yes. He's going to be the oldest guy. He's demonstrated some rebounding chops and obviously became one of the main generators of Michigan's offense over the past 6, 7, 8 games.
Yeah, and just for defending that four spot, he's by far the most physically mature of that group of wings and should be able to build on that a fair amount this summer. Because he's got that wide-shouldered frame where you can really pack a lot on there.
Yeah, he's a guy who could be that 6'6" power forward that you don't wince at when someone goes at him who's a more traditional power forward. Not like there's a whole lot of those around in the Big Ten anymore, of course. But Michigan struggled with rebounding last year, and if you get Irvin back and you get Irvin back like he was the last few games, puts up like 11 rebounds against Wisconsin, that kind of thing. Like, I think you're going to see him be a real plus in the aspects of the game that don't involve him having the ball in his hands. And that's
just remarkable to think about. That would be 2 months ago.
That would be a first for him, for any B-line four, being a plus with the ball not in your hand. I mean, you had Novak, who everybody loves Novak, and he tried really hard, but he was still like a 6'4" power forward. Like, these are things that
we ran into Blake Griffin and we realized that could be a really big problem.
There are things that you just cannot get over as a basketball player, and one is being way undersized for your position. And then Irvin, obviously, his late surge is a hugely promising thing for next year because he doesn't have to do that every game. I mean, if he does get four assists in every game, or that takes a lot of
Michigan's to be really darn good.
Yeah, that takes a lot of pressure off LeVert and Walton to do that stuff themselves. And then you kind of get that aspect of what you had the last 2 years, where Michigan was a crazy offensive, efficient offense with a breakout star each year, Burke and Stauskas. But neither of those guys was exactly putting up 32% of Michigan shots. Nobody was a super heavy usage guy. And that's how you become the best offense in the country, is that you attack whatever people aren't defending. And to do that, you need usage that is pretty close to even.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I expect next year. There's a lot of usage rates around 22 for a bunch of guys. And I think you might say the biggest development of the whole end of the season is Irvin all of a sudden showing that he can work that high screen. Because now all of a sudden you've got a few different guys who can do that in a few different ways. Because Spike could do it too, and he's mostly finding spot-up shooters when he's doing it.
But Irvin has that layup where it doesn't matter even if the guy's in good position. He's big enough and he's long enough where he can still get it off the board. And it's not just that the developing off the pick and roll after you've taken the pick. He's turned it down and gotten to the basket. He's developing some of that Stauskas stuff that we saw last year where it's like now he's doing the wraparound pass where he's really taking advantage of the fact that he has the angles that a shorter person doesn't have. He developed a great deal over the past couple months, and just maintaining that, let alone improving on that, it bodes very well.
Yeah,
said it all. Hey, and then backing him up will be some combination of Dawkins, Robinson, Chapman, and possibly Wagner, who we talked about. Chapman is an interesting guy. Obviously, the biggest recruit in this class, but looked like he had never seen a basketball for large portions of this year. Started fixing that late. I mean, there was the back-to-back impressive layups he had against Ohio State that forced him to call timeout, which was kind of a watershed moment. He hit some threes late. I mean, he's still not a great shooter. He still has this kind of deer in the headlights thing a little bit on defense, but he showed flashes. And when you're talking about a guy who was looking as out of place as he was before, flashes are a very good thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we got to hold on to at this point is like, he had a perfect post-entry feed to Ricky Doyle in the Wisconsin game. It was like you start to see little things like that. I think he's got the most rebounding potential of Michigan's wings because he's got super long arms and he's a pretty stout guy for a 6'7" wing.
Well, he needs to put on a little bit of weight, but you can see him doing that.
But you can see the physical potential there and just his rebounding instincts. Dawkins... Chapman just seemed to find himself around the ball when it was loose more than Dawkins did. And that seemed to be more of a positioning and instinct thing than anything else. Because obviously Dawkins has more than enough physical ability to go up and get boards. But Chapman just seemed to know where to be, know how to play the angles, and was good at boxing guys out and using his long arms to snatch rebounds. And if there's a role for him, it might be starting to build off of that a little bit. And hopefully start knocking down some jumpers because that'll really be what gets them on the court.
Chapman's another guy who I can easily see dropping out of the rotation. I mean, you've got so many options, and Chapman is not going to have a real long leash, I think. I mean, he will improve, but this is another guy who I feel this might be a kind of a quasi redshirt year for him. They won't literally redshirt him, but this is going to be a spot where, he might get 5 minutes a game. He might get 10 minutes a game, but expecting more than that, I don't really see it. And that's good because he's got a lot of potential, but I think he's going to need some more time to reach it.
I think his role is really dependent on if Aubrey Dawkins can defend the four, that's going to be a problem for Chapman. If Duncan Robinson can do it, that's a problem for Chapman. And if DJ Wilson breaks out, that's a problem for Chapman.
Well, Wilson is an interesting guy who I actually have filed as a center.
Yeah, I think, but Michigan's going to have three centers. We'll see. Maybe Donald drops out of the rotation. That seems eminently possible. But if, Wilson's probably still going to be a little bit undersized for what you want in a center. Yeah. So if Michigan can get away with Doyle and Donnell taking the center position and splitting most of those minutes, because usually you don't have a three-man center rotation. I mean, Michigan did this year, but usually you kind of prefer to just have two guys that you put in there.
Yeah.
All of a sudden that opens up an opportunity for Wilson to play more of the four. And if he can handle that, I like his potential there. I mean, we'll see. We didn't see much of him at all other than looking totally lost this year. But his physical potential is enticing.
So speaking of that, at center, I did file Wilson here just because I feel, you do need that third guy as a center just because centers are very foul prone.
And they've said, Beilein said Wilson's going to see a lot of time at the five.
Was seeing time at the five early in the year. And he's 6'9". He's got hops and really long arms. He's got great timing for blocking shots. In terms of being a shot alterer, I think he's obviously the number one guy on the roster.
Yeah. And you could even see a little bit of that in the very brief periods of time he was out on the court.
It was most clear when Michigan had an open practice early in the year, and he got a lot of time at the five, and he was an intimidating presence there just because he understood when you were going to go up with the ball, and he had the ability to go get it. So obviously needs so much weight.
Needs a lot.
Needs to spend most of the summer eating beefcake and becoming Cartman from that one episode of South Park that probably came out when some of our listeners were dead. And not born yet, but whatever. And then, of course, you have Doyle, who is my favorite on the team. I just love his skill level. Obviously, the hands are an issue. Worked very, very hard on the pick and roll, reminiscent of Jordan Morgan for big portions of the year. Still, you know, kind of obviously needs to grow into his size.
Yeah. But, and you know, Doyle mentioned after one of his impressive early season games, when he was starting to break out, that when he came in, he was planning on a red shirt. I mean, that was really, he was not expected to play at all this year. So what you said earlier about if this guy played 10 minutes a game this year as a backup, we'd all be pretty excited about him. That really holds true in that context where this was a guy who, you know, we expected Donnell to be the main guy at center.
Yeah.
And, you know, probably expected DJ Wilson to at least be something of a factor. I don't know if everybody was picking a red shirt there. I know when we were roundtabling before the season, there was some excitement about Wilson. But, you know, with Doyle, and obviously Horford leaving changed matters quite a bit, and where that at least took the redshirt possibility off the table. But Doyle still wasn't – nobody was really expecting that guy to be the starter and the clear-cut best option at center for most of the year.
Yeah, and then Denal, he was a disappointment. I mean, he has some perimeter shooting, but flat out – he could not compete with anybody physically, whether it was on defense, whether it was rebounding. I mean, he had some nice offensive flashes, but he was just such a huge downgrade from not only Doyle, but from 6'7 Max Bielefeld defensively, that he struggled to find playing time after the first couple months of the season. And bigs suck. Young bigs suck. This is our operative principle. He's got a longer way to go than I think Doyle does.
Especially since he'd benefited from having a year practicing on campus before seeing the court and still looked that green. My big, and you can tell how overwhelmed the centers were in terms of you start looking at foul rates for these guys, and you know, Tunnell was not a physical presence defensively, but he was committing over 6 fouls per 40 minutes.
Wow.
And the other guys were both below 4. He just, teams went right at him, and his options were give up a bucket or hack.
Yeah. So, I mean, I could see him dropping out of the rotation as well, especially if Wilson, that's kind of one of the reasons that I think that Wilson is going to be fouled at the 5, is because just if you need someone to give you 10 or 15 minutes defensively without getting crushed, you know, I think he might have a better chance at that than Denal.
Yeah. With the, you know, hopefully summer camp, Sanderson really does.
Yeah.
Does quite a bit there.
Yep. And then Wagner is an interesting wild card. If he comes in, he's obviously going to be expecting to play. And I don't know if he fully comprehends the depth of the Michigan roster. If he ends up not coming to Michigan, that would probably be the case, where he looks at the roster and he's like, where do I fit in here?
And is it preferable to just get paid to play? I mean, because it's probably going to come down to him going pro or him.
Well, he apparently is favoring the NCAA level over playing. I mean, the thing about playing in Europe is if you're a guy like him, he's probably not going to play next year.
Because you're the super young guy on a big club.
And you're real skinny. And the NCAA level is probably a better idea for him in terms of getting a lot of playing time next year. So it makes sense for him. Obviously, Michigan has put in the work to recruit him.
And if he's, you know, if he's really that top 20 to 40 recruiting rankings potential guy,
then he'll play.
And he's probably not going to look at Cam Chapman's performance this year or a redshirting DJ Wilson and go, oh no.
That's true. That is true. But this should be the deepest Beeline roster we've seen. I mean, minus a spectacular set of unexpected NBA defections, even without LeVert, you're looking at, I think, a 10-man rotation that will probably narrow itself down to 8 or 9 at some point. But even without LeVert, you're looking at a lot of guys who I think can play.
The beginning of the season is going to be just kind of a whittling down process.
It'll be quite a war there, and it'll be interesting. I have no doubts that that is an NCAA team.
I mean,
they could be back at the level where they were a couple of years ago. Maybe not that level, but in terms of like
that was a pretty high level
in terms of seeding, where they were a 4 seed.
Yes.
So I think. You know, if you're having a lot of variables, you know, Walton and Robinson, can Irvin still be what he was the last bit? Can Doyle, maybe Donald Wilson develop?
And when you just look at what Beeline coached this season's team up to, where, you know, you're going 8-10 in the Big Ten and looking pretty respectable against good teams. And, you know, and that's with losing four overtime games down the stretch.
Yep.
They were pretty close to making a really surprise run at something.
At something. Probably an NIT bid, but probably something.
And considering, you know, they're throwing out lineups with Andrew Dockich and Sean Lonergan on the court
at the same time.
Yeah, it wasn't a great idea, but, you know, that did happen. And they managed to win some of those games. I mean,
that is
they
true.
Managed to be competitive with that.
You know what the nice thing about this roster for next year is like, I'm not going to complain about auto-benching much. I'll probably complain about it like once. But, you know, if you're taking out LeVert and you're bringing in Marr, that's a whole different level of, all right, I accept this.
Yeah, it is very different than going, okay, we're going to deal with 10 minutes of Andrew Dockich running the point.
No offense to Andrew Dockich.
No, none at all.
It's just that
he's not quite as good as Spike or Derek Walton.
That is correct. All right, let's take a break and talk about it. So Michigan loses three of the last four of the season. They have no shot at an at-large bid. They lost their bye in the Big Ten tournament, and they did it in kind of a mind-boggling way. So they're tied 1-1 with Michigan State. They've been bombing them the whole game, but they can't put the puck in the net because Michigan State. Remember that Sergei Fedorov commercial from back in the day where he just goes by? You don't. There's a Nike Sergei Fedorov commercial from back in the day where he goes by like 25 different guys, and then he gets to the goalie, and there's like six different goalies just like mirroring his movements. That's Michigan State, just that last bit. And so they're just bombing him. They're doubling him up in shots and all that stuff. Their zone time is probably three times what Michigan State's zone time is, and they just can't get it in. And it's 1-1, though, and Michigan gives up a breakaway on a puck that was just kind of chipped out at the half boards. Not a quick transition at all. No reason it should get in behind anybody, but it does get in behind Brandon Serville, and that's a goal. And then Hildebrand makes a couple of ridiculous saves, and that's it. So Michigan loses a shot at the Big Ten title, which goes to Minnesota. They lose their first round bye, and that's just kind of a perfect encapsulation of not just this year, but like the last two as well, where at some point there it looks like things could be going pretty well, and then you get this wake-up call that this is no longer – a 1990s Michigan hockey team. And
there seem to be just these festering season-long issues that really come to a head at really important times.
Well, I think that we have some festering career-long issues at this point because Serville is the guy who came in, and he's still the same player as he was when he was a freshman. He's very inconsistent. He doesn't read the game very well. And we've noticed this drop-off after Mel Pearson left, and I have to wonder if that has a lot to do with it. Just because the defense corps this year, I mean, a lot of them came back from last year. I don't think anybody has improved one iota on defense. Obviously, Hyman has gotten a lot better on offense. You're seeing guys progress as forwards.
Yeah.
But, like, Downing is still making so many mistakes. I mean, my buddy and I have nicknamed the shot that goes directly into a defender from the point that has no chance of getting through that defender, the Downing, because he does that several times a game.
And that's just begging for a two-on-one in the other
direction.
It is.
It's a really dangerous thing to do, and Downing just makes that decision constantly. I haven't seen him improve. The one guy who I think he's gotten better over the course of this year is Cutler Martin. Cutler Martin has really become one of the most dependable guys that they have.
Surprise breakaway goal on Friday.
I don't think I've seen a breakaway goal from a defenseman before, but at least not at Yost. Well, that was it. Whatever. At least not with Michigan. And I'm just increasingly frustrated at the state of this team because it's not just all the goalies. I mean, it's about putting yourself in a position where the goalies can make an impact. And even though Michigan overall had a very good game against State on Saturday – they made the critical mistakes that they have made all year. Unchecked guys in the slot. I mean, that's how you lose to Ohio State and a lot of other teams. Just an unbelievable set of breakdowns that make me think that the team's discipline just no longer is there. And that's been the case, like with the Guptill guys, where you just didn't back check at all. And you know, it's at the point where I'm not going to call for Red Berenson's firing ever, just because I don't want to be struck from the sky by a pillar of lightning. But at this point, you know, his last season is next year on his contract, and he said that this was probably it for him. And you know, if I was Hackett, I would be talking to Mel Pearson right now. And I'd be talking to Red right now about, like, you know, we can make this happen. We can bring in Mel right now. And this would guarantee that one of your guys is here. Otherwise, I might be looking at Norm Bazin at Lowell or a couple other guys in Hockey East who have done very well. But we can make this happen now. And if Red says go to hell, then I would go to hell. But, you know, this is one of those things where it seems like it's time. And I think they should rename Yost Ice Arena Berenson Ice Arena, but I think it's also time. And that sucks. It sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been, you know, somebody who grew up with 90s Michigan hockey and early aughts Michigan hockey, the experience of all of a sudden seeing them desperately try to claw their way into the NCAA tournament year after year has been
jarring. And not make it in the way, and just ways that are just boggling, like losing to a team that had won, I think, 6 games last year in Penn State when all you need to do is win 1 game.
Yeah.
Like the finish this year where you lose to Ohio State, you get swept by Penn State, you lose again to this piece of crap Michigan State team. And it's just, you know, you have so much talent on this team. You have Dylan Larkin going nuts. You have Zach Hyman, who should be a Hobie finalist, but might not be because, you know, he might not make the tournament. It's just, you have so much talent on this team, and to be in the spot that you're in is, every other team in the Big Ten other than Minnesota would kill for Michigan's talent. And Minnesota had their own issues this year, but they still won the league. And Michigan was in that opportunity, but they blew it, and they blew it again. Like, this isn't like a one-time thing now. This is kind of their MO. And for it to get to this point is very disappointing. And maybe Red comes back for one last hurrah and does make it, because he should be getting everybody back other than Hyman. Because, you know, the wings tend to leave guys in college or the AHL until – well after is reasonable.
Yeah, until everybody is ready to kill Ken Holland for not playing good players instead of Dan frickin' Cleary.
So, yeah. So, I think you'll get Larkin back. I think you'll get everybody back, even Werenski, who might be a top 10 pick. And then you're adding a guy in Kyle Connor who's moving up the all-time USHL scoring list and is probably a really good player. But you still have to fix whatever that thing is at the heart of your program that tends to make you make terrible mistakes that you should not make. And I don't know. I don't know. It's, you know, I kind of feel like this is similar to the thing that happened to Brady Hoke when he lost his authority. Like, I don't know if people are afraid of Red anymore. And I am.
Yeah.
By God, I am. But it just doesn't feel like these guys have the discipline that they used to have, where they used to be a very high octane attacking fire wagon hockey type team. But at the same time, they would give up like some of the fewest goals in the country because they dominated attack time. And then when things got back in their zone, they were still responsible. And it doesn't feel like that anymore. It feels like they dominate the attack time and then they make huge, dumb mistakes all the time in their defense zone.
And they no longer have the goaltending to cover up for that either.
Well, yeah, I mean, wasn't Nagelvoort like a 946 guy last year? I mean, they've had some – I didn't think that it was goaltending at all in the first half of the season. And I thought that they were giving up.
I think those 3 goals from Friday are sticking in my head more than they should.
Those 3 goals from Friday were ridiculous.
Because those were just like, that's not how you play goalie goals.
Those were – yeah, I – that's
dude did a 360 in his own crease looking for a rebound.
That stands out as the – like whenever I need like a – that was the worst goalied game since that will be the game. Because I was trying to – I haven't seen a goal that bad since I saw Josh Blackburn give up a bouncer from outside the blue line against Michigan State and the Joe. And then I thought about it and I was like, no.
Even Chris Osgood did that a couple times and he was a good NHL goalie.
Like that is a lot worse. Like what I just saw was a lot worse. But
the poke check,
yeah.
Turn to the side.
I mean, yeah, if you had a miracle worker back there, things would be going better. But at the same time, like they lost this Michigan State game because the other goalie played out of his mind, and they gave up a breakaway that in no way should have been a breakaway.
With this much talent on the team, you shouldn't need a miracle worker in goal. Yeah. You just need a competent college goalie.
Yes, but they are struggling, and I don't know, man. Third year out of the tournament, unless they win three games in three nights, is tough to swallow. So that's that, which I didn't want to talk about. We've gone a long time, but let's talk about Jack Miller. I don't think it matters that much. We talked about Jack Miller. There we go.
Woo! Yeah.
Anyway.
Glasgow or Kugler?
Yeah, and then you'll have a guy at guard who's
awesome. That was a question. Do you expect it to be Glasgow or Kugler sliding?
I think it'll be Glasgow, because I think that they'll be more comfortable putting Magnuson in the lineup than Kugler.
That makes a certain amount of sense.
Kugler will start as an upperclassman, which is the ideal trajectory for an offensive lineman. 3 years of apprenticeship and then two in the starting lineup, which
we haven't had that in a while.
Might be able to do with somebody. So there you go.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender along with Brian Cook, and I just want to shout out Vincent Smith, who said at his eating fundraiser on Saturday that his favorite block of all time was sustaining a concussion while shot blocking JJ Watt, which just goes to show how awesome he is and how crazy football players are.